Did you know buying, selling, fixing houses, and investing in real estate is easier than you think? All you need is help from a couple of experts who flipped hundreds of houses, seen most situations, and are here to share their knowledge with you. Welcome to the Real Estate Roundup Radio Show with Andrew Jobe and J.R. Reed from selltojr.com.
Hello, Rounders. Welcome to the Real Estate Roundup Radio Show. So glad you guys were able to join us today. I am one of your hosts, Andrew Jobe, joined by Mr. J.R. Reed. How you doing, J.R.?
What's going on, sir?
Not too much. Just happy to be here.
We got another action-packed show for the Rounders today.
I'm excited about J.R., I'm going to let you introduce our guests, but Rounders, you know how we like to bring you guys value in terms of real estate. We have got an amazing guest today that's not going to talk about just real estate, but the details and the nitty-gritty of marketing in real estate.
Yeah. Specifically, that one thing that everybody either struggles at or they crush it, but there's really no in-between, which is social media marketing. So, without further ado, we've got Mr. Courtney Scott from Alpha Media. And I want to give it, like, before I just say Courtney Scott from Alpha Media, I want to give Courtney a quick shout-out. So, we actually use Alpha Media for our own marketing on social media. So, they run all of our ads to find motivated sellers through Facebook and TikTok and Instagram. And so these guys know what they're doing, and we didn't just bring somebody on that we haven't tested. We've actually tested this company out and used their services. So without further ado, Courtney.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Thank you guys so much for having me.
For sure, man. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. I learned something about you today. I didn't know you live in Houston.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I've been here for what, like 5-7 years now.
Wow. Yeah.
That's okay. Pretty much makes you a Houstonian.
Ooh, I like it. That's why I got the hat.
Houston, yeah, you can't see if you're listening to us right now. He's got an amazing cowboy hat on. Why don't you tell us about that? Because before we started the show, just a little bit about you. Yeah. You were just telling me how you broke your pelvis bull riding.
Yes, yes. Okay.
So you're not just wearing the hat. You are the hat.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So, man, I got into it. I loved it, and I went over to Europe, which is funny enough. So I stayed in Texas, but I went to Europe, and I was like, I'm out there. I bought a one-way ticket to, like, Netherlands, and I was like, man, let me just look up the culture. If you guys didn't know, the Western culture is huge out there.
Really?
Like, really, really, really huge.
In the Netherlands?
Not in the Netherlands, more like Belgium, like a two-hour drive. Okay. So I packed up my car, and I looked, I'm like, all right, Europe rodeos in Belgium popped up. And I went to this place called Gypsy Horse Ranch, and it was out there, and I did a couple of road trips from ranch to ranch. It was magnificent, but I learned a bull riding there. And they kept making fun of me. They're like, hey, you came all the way here to do bull riding when you literally in Texas where most of them are coming from. I was like, yeah, I know, it's crazy. Was out there for like 2-3 weeks, and I was like, forget it. I want to get on a bull. Had too many drinks in me, probably had like 6 beers in me. Ooh. And I was like, all right, let's do it. That's probably how I broke my pelvis.
Those Belgian
beers, too. They just grown alcohol.
That's probably what you needed to get the courage to actually do it, though.
Yeah, exactly. And I sat on it, and they was like, man, why are you smiling? Normally when somebody sit on a bull for the first time, they're like, oh, shoot, it kind of hits them because you feel how big it is. You're looking at it, it don't look that big.
Yeah.
Except, you know, a guy here, he said, yeah, he wouldn't do it, right? And I totally agree with them.
For sure.
But I sat on it, and I loved it, and I'm like, I'm home. You know, and he jumped out of the chute. I only stayed on it for 4 seconds, but within that 4 seconds, he broke my pelvis.
Ooh.
So, like, on the first buck, he broke my pelvis, like, in 1 second, and the other 3 seconds, I held on, but I lost power in my leg, so I couldn't wrap my leg around him like I wanted to, and as he turned, I was trying to catch him with my leg, and he just bucked me on off, and boom, I'm just laying in the dirt. I jump up. So I'm thinking, it's my sack, you know? Yeah. So I jump up, and I'm like, all right, man, I ain't going to be able to. And I couldn't walk. And I was like, why I can't walk? And they had bullfighters had to come get me in there and carry me out. And I tried to walk on it a couple times, get to the hospital. I didn't know my pelvis were broke because it's called an open book fracture.
Okay.
So I could still use my legs. And I get to the hospital. They start cussing the people out. The guy that brought me there, he's like, why did you bring him here in a car? Normally when we have these accidents, they need to be on stretchers. I'm surprised this guy didn't pass out. And then he looked over, he said it in Dutch. He looked over and said, that's cowboy tough. And I was like, I started laughing. I felt good about it. But I was in the hospital for like 2 weeks or a week or two.
In Europe?
In Europe.
Whoa.
And the surgery was only $6,000.
Only $6,000?
Only $6,000.
Okay.
I was like, okay.
That's not bad.
It's not bad at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great story for your first time, first experience bull riding.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the most bull riding I've done is an electric bull at a bar.
Yeah.
And I did as well have a couple beers in me at the time, so it's kind of the same thing.
Kind of the same thing.
Exact same thing, except his was real.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a big beast.
Scary beast too.
Yeah.
Cause you get tunnel vision. So like you get tunnel vision when you want them. Nothing else matters. All you do is looking at this big beast, and I'm trying to stay on them, and I can't see nothing, man. I can't see the crowd. I can't see the people. And then when I fall off of them, I get up. And I don't care if nobody's there because my pelvis broke and I'm like in so much pain. I get off and everybody making, you know, the bull riders, they just want to make jokes, real rough guys. I'm like, guys, I think I'm dying here.
I'm in major pain.
Yeah, yeah. One of them came up to me and like he was going to hit me. And I was like, all right, come on, dude. I can't even block. I'll just take it as it comes, you know? So it was really nice.
So did you know anybody over there? Or are you just like, I'm going to the Netherlands and then I'm going to Belgium?
No, which is funny because when I went out there, I didn't know nobody. But all of them came to visit me in the hospital.
Really?
Which it was crazy. And I was like, man, dude, the support, like, those are great people. I bought them gifts. I took them out to dinner. I'm like, you don't get this. In the hospital, like, to me, this is really cool. You guys went out your way. And they brought me a lot of whiskey inside of the hospital.
That's
like, hey, you're a natural painkiller right here. And it was really nice of them to do that. But I didn't know nobody. I had no friends, no family. It was just me out there by myself.
Who would have thought a bunch of Belgium cowboys?
Yeah. Exactly.
I never would have thought.
Yes. And they awesome.
That's cool. I love that. Well, cool, man. So why don't we tell the Rounders? So we call our listeners the Rounders.
Okay.
Why don't you tell the Rounders, like, how did you, where'd you grow up? How'd you end up in Houston? Those kinds of things.
Okay. So I grew up in Montgomery, Alabama. That's where I'm from, born and raised. Then I traveled around, but I ended up in Houston from Lansing, Michigan. So I came from Lansing, Michigan. I stayed there for about 5 years. My mom just traveled us around a lot. After 5 years, I was like, man, dude, I came to an event out here a while back, and I was like, I want to move to Texas. What's the biggest, because I'm a people person, very extroverted, and I was like, let me just go to Houston. 2 million people, seemed like I could make a lot of money there. Booked the ticket, got the apartment, got everything, spent my last. And when I booked everything, I was down to like $50. Out of the 50, I had to get the Uber to take me to the airport. I had a book bag. It was full of books. A suitcase full of books, a book bag with two outfits in it,
okay,
and a pair of slides. I still got the slides to the day. I still wear them. And when I came, I had the Uber to the airport and had the Uber to the apartment complex, but I only had like $20 left. And out of that $20, I had to spend that and had to call my granny and ask her for money after a long time because, like, I don't have enough money for a hotel. So I had to go and get a hotel. I was like negative $30 my first day in Houston. First day, they gave me the keys. Everything went good. I moved in and had got a blanket, and I just slept on the floor for like 2 months while reaching out to clients and while modifying that account.
So you didn't even have like a bed or anything. You just moved into an apartment with your book bag and a couple like outfits, and that's it.
That's it. And I didn't even have Wi-Fi. I was using a hotspot on my phone. And my whole business is like on the internet. So I was like, man, just hook up my hotspot, and I'll just work on my laptop. And that's all I did.
Okay, so were you doing, you know, Facebook and Instagram marketing before you moved here, or?
Yes.
Okay.
So I had a couple clients, but I was doing it for e-com.
Okay.
So that's why I generated a lot of money. I made a lot of money for my clients, but I was just starting out, so I was being cheap. So I was charging cheap because I didn't know my value then, but I wasn't making nothing. I wasn't making a dime. But I came down here, was like, all right, I hope all my clients pay me the next month.
Yeah.
Then the next month came, like, dang, clients didn't pay, you know?
Oh, wow.
Or they was prolonging the pay, but I was betting on that they paid, didn't pay, so I had to go get new clients. It was a lot. Went from, like, door knocking on businesses, talking to people, just networking.
Wow. Yeah. So how did you learn to do all the social media marketing?
YouTube University.
Okay.
It's YouTube University and trial and error. I've been doing it for, like, 7 years. I started my own business, dropshipping, probably when I was, like, 18 years old. Okay. I was in high school, and I had my Shopify dashboard pulled up. I think I made, like, 80K, not all profit, but like 80K. And my teacher walks by and she's like, what is that? I was like, yeah, that's how much money I made in like the last 7 months. And she's like, that's more than me. Literally. And it was like 2 weeks before the SATs. And I was like, yeah, I'm not going to college. And then so I just started putting C on all of the answers. And I was
for
like,
your SATs?
For my SATs.
Oh,
yep.
My gosh.
And I just like, all right, I'm not going to college. And I just opted out of college right then and there. I knew what I wanted to do, entrepreneurship, and it was all because of the marketing, and that's the side I fell in love with.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So drop shipping to Where did you go from there to get into the social media marketing?
E-com. And that's because, so with the drop shipping, I had to market my business, right? So I had to say, how can I market my own business and spend my own money? I was working like two jobs to come up with the funds. Boom, threw it all into like Facebook ads. By the time I spent probably $100,000 of my own money, I'm like, I don't like it. You know, I don't like not talking to people because all you do is sit at home. And then I'm like, let me go and talk to other business owners, see if I can help them with their marketing. So I just let that business die out, and I just started helping other social media. I just started helping other e-com businesses and take it and run with it.
Really?
Yeah.
Dang, man. Okay, so then you start finding these. How did you get these other e-com businesses as clients, though?
Man, I was just saying, hey, dude, I scaled my store up to here. Didn't really like not talking to people. So let's talk. Let's create your strategy plan and see how we can help you grow your business. They was like, okay, awesome. Help scale up. Okay. Offered it for free. They made a lot of money. Then they started paying me.
Nice, yep. Man. Okay, so then you scale up some e-com businesses. And then how in the world did you end up, like, deciding to get into real estate then? Because you moved to Houston. Yeah. You were doing the e-com thing, it sounds like. And then somewhere along the lines, you ran into some kind of real estate person.
Exactly. Like. Exactly. So I was running ads to get more people in for my e-com business. And as I was running ads, this one wholesaler reached out to me. And he was like, man, dude, I know you don't do ads for wholesalers. You only do it for, you know, e-com. But just try it. I'll pay you this. And he was trying to, he offered to pay me more than what I was charging e-com. I'm like, of course I will. Came in, killed it for him. And I was like, this is where the money's at.
Where? What year was this? Like, how long ago?
This was 2021. Okay. 2021. And I was like, I'm in the game. And then I was like, how can I perfect this? How can I be the best at this?
Okay.
So I took the econ background and just implemented it over.
And so you became I'm going to market for direct-to-seller marketing from here on out and motivated sellers.
Boom. Yes, sir.
Okay. Cool. That's very, very cool. And so that was here in Houston. You met the guy here in Houston or online?
Online.
Okay.
Yeah, online. And I met him, called him up. I was like, man, I don't know. He's like, dude, just try it. Because I need somebody to crack the code on Facebook. I've been trying it here and there. And I'm like, okay, I'll try it for you. And I tried it, killed it, 2 months. He was like, love the results, made the return, made it quick. And that's cool. You're my go-to guy. I was like, all right, thank you. I was like, thank you so much. And then I just slowly started to scale some, the e-com guys. I scaled them up. Hired my replacement because I didn't just leave them dry. But then I was like, all right, forget it. I'm going all in on wholesalers.
Why did you go all in on wholesalers? Like, what made you, like, from that one interaction, what made you in your mind go, this is where the money's at?
Because 20K rips on wholesale deals, right? So it's super profitable for you guys if they do it right. And they understand business, right? Like, some people, they go and create this magnificent product. They don't put, like, you know, they do a lot of research and, you know, development on the product, but don't have any money for marketing because they think the product's going to sell itself. Right. When wholesalers, you know, it's just wholesaling. I mean, it's just sales and marketing. All right, you know the sales, just get the marketing. Get the right marketing and boom.
That's true.
So it just made me just say, all right, these guys know they need marketing. I know they need it. So I'm in the door.
Yeah, I mean, the wholesaling business is 100% based on marketing.
Yeah.
I mean, you could do it off of referrals, or other ways, but your business is not going to, you can't scale that way.
Yeah.
It's going to be a slow go.
Exactly. Unless they're like in like one of those really, really, really small towns, but you ain't never going to grow it if you stay there, you know?
For sure. Absolutely. Okay. So you start doing, you look at the amount of profit or margin that happens on each deal on a wholesale deal. And you're like, okay, these guys are making $20,000 on each wholesale deal.
Yeah.
I want to get a piece of that pie. So explain your thought process of like how you can get a piece of that pie.
So I look at it as like 30% of your 30% of how much you make goes to marketing.
Yep.
So I'm like, all right, if they're making 20% on the average spread, what are 20%? And you start reverse engineering the numbers. I'm like, all right, they can at least spend, what is that? $6,000? So I'm like, all right, $6,000 so they can make them $20,000. Who wouldn't do that? Right. That is a great marketing investment for you. And I'm like, how can I charge and add ad spend in there? And I can scale them up. So let me go scale somebody to 5 deals.
Okay.
To make them $100K. And I get more money as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So your whole thought was, how can I help them make more money?
Yeah.
So I can just get a little sliver of the pie, basically.
Yeah. I heard on someone's podcast a long time ago when I was making the transition. To make a lot of money, just help a lot of people make a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm in. You know, like, I'm in. Like, right then and there, I was like, I like that. I'm gonna stick to marketing because that's the best way to help a lot of people make a lot of money.
Yeah. There's a saying out there. I don't know who said this, but there's a saying that says if you help a lot of people get what they want out of life, you'll get exactly what you want out of life. Something like
boom.
That.
Boom. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that.
And so you're living it.
Yes, yes, yes. It's finally paying off after, you know, 6 years. It's finally paying its dividends, but it's awesome.
Okay, cool. So let's talk about, okay, you went from running all the ads yourself and trying to reach out to these wholesalers and that sort of thing. How did you start picking up the wholesalers, and then how did you grow the business from there?
Kind of putting my money where my mouth was as far as in doing the marketing myself. So I kind of feel like if you're a marketing company, you don't market, you shouldn't be a marketing company, right? True. So I just started marketing. I'm like, all right, what are the big things that wholesalers are looking for? Inbound leads, motivated seller leads. So let me put an ad up and say, hey, I get motivated seller leads. And that's the way I've gotten a lot of wholesalers to at least be interested in motivated seller leads.
Really?
Yeah.
And so you basically would build up a funnel.
Yeah.
Coming in.
Yeah.
And of all these wholesalers coming in. And then were you converting them yourself? You were basically the salesperson for your company at the time?
Yeah, at the time. Yep. When I first started off, I was the sales guy, kind of get all the systems, the processes in place. And I was like, all right, all this makes sense, but let me go what I love doing. Let me get back into the ad account, start hiring sales reps. And it started, that's when it really started to take off.
Really?
Yeah.
So when you ended up hiring sales reps to start bringing people on.
Yeah, yeah.
At what point in your business did you start, like, who was your first hire into the business?
A buddy of mine, actually. Okay. One of my closest friends. And he was trying to start his marketing thing, and I'm like, how about this? He was in Lansing. I was like, come down to Houston. We lived in the same apartment complex.
Okay.
And I was like, man, you should just focus on sales and close for me. And he was like, all right, let's do it.
So that's how y'all did?
That was the first one, yep. And I think I was paying him like 15% or something. It was crazy.
He was getting a good deal, or was you?
Oh, he was getting a good deal. He was getting a great deal.
Was he?
Yeah, yeah. He made good money with less stress. You know what I mean? So I say it that way. As a, you know, as the business owner, I made more profit for sure, but the stress that came with it, managing so many clients at one time.
Yeah.
It kind of
so how many clients were you managing, or did y'all get up to, just you and him?
Just me and him. I think we got up to like 55 or something like that.
You were managing all those ad accounts yourself?
Yes.
Oh,
and
wow.
You talking about managing it, and you wasn't really good at setting the expectations. So it's like, all right, I got to get these guys crazy results really fast because they threw the door because he didn't know how to set the expectations. It was a headache.
I could imagine.
Yeah.
But then you got half of your clients are maybe upset because you're not getting.
Yeah.
You're not fulfilling the expectations that he promised them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the sales guys, they just like.
I couldn't imagine that a sales guy would do something like that. That doesn't sound accurate.
Exactly.
They would never do that kind of thing.
Yeah. They're not like that.
They're not like that. Do anything to get the business? No.
Yeah. Fulfillment team's problem after that.
Exactly. Exactly. So that literally my fulfillment team keep yelling at my sales team all the time, like, why did you promise this guy this?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, go because we got another guy this results. Like, he got a whole team. We don't have a whole team. So it's like, you're not going to get the same results as this guy here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. That makes a lot of sense. Cool, man. So you hired your friend, and then where was your next hire after that?
Man, my next hire was, I had to get, because I was getting so many leads in from the funnel. And I'm like, man, I can't call all these leads. We need a speed to lead. That was a big thing, you know, as it is in wholesaling and all sales. And I was like, let me go and hire a setter. I don't know if you guys are familiar with setters.
Sure.
Okay.
Like an appointment setter?
Yeah, appointment setter. Yep.
Okay.
So let me go and hire a setter. And I went and hired a setter, and she probably generated millions for the company. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, millions for the company.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, because she's been with me for like a year and a half, almost 2 years.
Okay. How did you find her?
Actually, because I wasn't good at sales, so I had to hire a sales coach. Okay. So the sales coach, I was like, hey, man, dude, if I'm doing the sales calls and I'm teaching this guy to do sales, I needed an appointment setter. He was like, all right, I know somebody. He put me in touch with her. And
So he was like, he handed her off to you, basically.
Yes. Yep. Handed it off to me. Yep.
That's amazing, man.
She made good money.
She made good money, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she's still with you.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Okay. Cool. So you hired the appointment setter. Then you had your sales guy. You're trying to do sales and run ad accounts and make sure it all runs together.
Yeah.
And then what happened next?
I just started hiring. Started replacing myself.
Okay.
So, like, then the next hire came, like, an assistant because it got too much. Then it became, like, a CSM. So, then instead of talking to the clients, I'm actually doing the work. The last thing I handed off was, I think, like, the quality calls. Like, because I'm like, okay, talk about the lead quality. Like, what's the best way to automate this? Going to hire someone to actually do the quality calls to see how to optimize ads because I like it. But I think, like, somewhere in there, I hired a media buyer. And that was a long process for me because I loved it. And it was like, do I really want to hire a media buyer?
So when you say hire a media buyer, what does a media buyer do for somebody that does social media marketing?
So they do all the media. Like they say, hey, okay, we're going to manage, $3K a month in ad spend. They're going to make sure that which ads is going to make sure it's optimizing the right demographics, making sure they're writing the right headlines, ad copy, using the right pictures. And they're doing all the buying. They're buying all the media.
Okay, so they are optimizing the ad accounts.
Yes, yes.
Wow, okay. That's a tough job.
That's a, it's a tough job. And I'm a tough, because I love it. So I'm a tough, what would you say? Because
that's your boss. Superpower.
Yeah, so I love it. So I'm in the accounts and I'm looking like, why did you do this? Or this should have been done here. Now we got to push this back 2 weeks. We don't have 2 weeks to waste when it's the client's money. You know, so I'm like very like, okay, because the clients trust me, you know. So if we don't get them results, it's going to be my fault. And they expect me to be in these ad accounts.
Because Courtney's name is on the company.
Exactly. You see my face and you see this black cowboy hat. The same one.
So with so much expertise that you've developed for yourself from YouTube University and kind of learning this across all the platforms, right? So presumably you're Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, you're across all platforms.
Yeah.
How do you transfer that knowledge and support your team? Obviously the sales and the marketing side is one thing, but when you bring on an ad buyer and kind of the schedulers and the fulfillment, how do you transfer that towards your quality, your expertise? You can make sure that it's the product that you want to deliver.
Man, a lot of training, like a lot. Because most of you got to untrain them on what they've learned already before, and everybody opt out for the easiest way, right? So I just went through a lot of training. Like today, I was doing a 3-hour training call right before I came here with the client success. I think they do good, but it's like, how can we get better? And just always trying to lead, because I never had employees. Now I think I have 20 employees, and I'm like, everybody want to be an entrepreneur until they got to manage 20 different personalities. You know, it's 20 different personalities. And it was just as far as in me falling on my face a lot. And I was like, all right, I want to replace myself. Let me replace myself. But when I was first started replacing myself, I'm thinking these guys already know how to do what I hired them for. But I hired you for the job. And I tell them to figure it out. And when they figured it out, I didn't like it. So I'm like, instead of let me doing that back and forth, and I had a lot of clashing, and I was like, let me just show you guys how I want it done. And they were like, oh, okay, thank you. And so now I started to develop into that, being a leader instead of bossing them around. So let me do it for you to lead you guys to doing it.
Cool. Well, excuse me. I mean, 20 employees and showing 20 different people how to do things, that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a whole lot of training. I mean, that's a full-time job all in itself.
Yeah.
So how do you... You know, how do you set up standards and processes in your company to be able to train these people?
Yeah, so that goes back to a while ago we used project management tools.
Okay.
Like Monday or Asana, and you use things like that to make sure, all right, if a client comes on, this is how fast you should contact them. This is the process. This is how fast they should be onboarded. By this month right here, they should be at least having a deal closed. And we have all of that lined out for all of the clients. And kind of just, I created the system and said, hey guys, follow this. And if it doesn't get followed to an exact T, then it's going to be a break in the system somewhere.
Okay.
And I just had to go through, and that's some tedious work. So,
what's the tedious part of it?
Man, going back and just redoing it. For one, talking on camera. So I hate talking on camera. So I'm like, all right. So guys, when a client comes in here, this is what you want to do. This is what you should say. This is how you get their ad manager account. This is it. Like going over and keep redoing the work and then doing it on camera is like really tedious. And then got to show it to them again, show it to them again. It get really repetitive.
For sure.
Yeah, really.
It's awful.
Yeah, so now I start to teach people, say, I'm going to teach you how to show them so you can start showing the next person we hire.
Great.
Because that process isn't for me.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Well, you got to replace yourself.
Yeah, and that's kind of hard if you love it. You know, you love what you do. You're like, man, dude, I like talking to clients.
For sure. So you're saving these. It sounds like you've got a whole training packet that you give to somebody depending on their position.
Yes.
And you're using Monday and Asana for them to figure that out, or?
Yes, exactly. So created a training form when you get onboarded. So we got SOPs for even bringing someone on that's want to be a CSM.
Okay.
So you have to follow this. You have to do this. You have to learn everything about real estate. If they've never been in real estate, you have to learn everything about real estate by week one. If you don't, you're off the team. Because you wasn't working hard enough. All right, then you have to learn everything about the CRM because clients gonna have a lot of questions about the CRM.
Yep.
You don't, you're off the team. So we have timelines for them and stick like SOPs that you have to stick to.
Yeah,
standard operating procedures that you have to stick to even be on the team. Because guess what, your whole business is gonna be around SOPs
for sure.
Because all the clients are around SOPs. So yeah, at least know how to, if you can stick to your SOPs.
For sure. The reason I'm you know, selfishly digging into this is because whenever I interacted with your team, I did notice, and I have noticed, that they know what they're doing. And they do a good job of doing it. And so I was like, man, he must train his people really well. So that's why I'm selfishly kind of diving into this to figure out, like, okay, what's this guy's process for training his people?
Yeah, and like today we spent like 3 hours on it. Like every morning, most of my time is like managing people. So like 3 hours today, yesterday, the day before, we just on Zoom, talking through processes, running through numbers, like, hey, when a client say they made this much, it's how much profit they're talking about. Because that's all you want. Right. You can close a lot of deals, but how much you taking home?
For sure.
And I'm just basically breaking down the numbers to them, making sure they understand the business aspect of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're teaching that to them and working on training and that kind of thing. What does your day-to-day kind of look like now?
Ooh, with the broken pelvis? Before the broken Okay, with the broken pelvis. So I don't go to the gym anymore. I normally get up and go to the gym, but like at 7:30, I'm taking my sales meeting. So at 7:30, I'm taking the sales meeting. After I'm done with the sales meeting, I'm hopping right on with the client success team. And we're going over clients that are not getting results. And we're trying to figure out exactly how to get them the best results. What do we need to make? Pull up the ad accounts, see what expectations they had, see why they're not getting results, and fix that problem before it becomes a bigger problem.
Cool.
So I'm probably on a meeting with them for like 2-3 hours every day. Then after that, it's just calling clients and just talking stuff with clients. Like, hey, yeah, man, how's it going? And doing a lot of content lately.
Nice.
Yeah, I've been posting a really lot of content. That's been taking a lot of my time.
I love it. That's awesome. We're going to take a short break. And on the back half, we're going to get more into some marketing tips and tricks for our listeners. And then also figure out what else you got going on in your business.
Boom. Yes, sir.
All right.
Welcome back, Rounders. So glad you're here. That was an action-packed first half of the show with Courtney Scott here talking about Alpha Media. Man, appreciate everything you're sharing about you and about your business. I think this half, we kind of want to get more into the technical, more what does it take to actually do marketing, run marketing? What are some of the tips and the tricks on how to be successful in this? But let's just pick it back up. Let's just keep talking about marketing.
Okay, awesome. Let's do it. I think, man, what it takes is understanding like your margins. And I think a lot of people don't understand business. Wholesalers and real estate investors, it's just sales and marketing. They get the sales side down, but once you get enough deals in the door, now you got to transition to that business mindset. And that's troubling for a lot of people to realize that it's a business. They just stay sales guys, sales guys, sales guys.
For sure.
And understanding their margins to help them out a lot. Say, okay, if I can get a 4X return, I'll be massively profitable. Or, hey, if I got to pay my acquisition guys, I got overhead and all this stuff. Understanding where you're unprofitable at will help you out a lot. So I think once they identify that, then you need to do some type of inbound.
For sure.
100%. You need the leads coming to you. And because, you know, with the A2P, the government regulations and the cold calling, it's shooting a lot of people. And the people that didn't make that transition in wholesaling, where they at now?
It's tough.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really hard.
Man, you know, it's one of those things, too. You mentioned there's a lot of wholesalers out there that they can do the sales part of it, which is like they can go figure out how to get a deal from cold calling or door knocking or texting or whatever it is. They get a few deals done and they're still salespeople at the end of the day. And you've got to make that transition to become a business owner. If you really want to scale your business, you can stay a salesperson and be a good wholesaler.
Yeah.
But you're never going to, you know, transition to where you have like an amazing business running.
Exactly. And most of the sales guys, they don't want to spend the money. You know, because if you're in sales, what is it? All the leads are generated for you, right? As a business owner, you got to spend that money to generate the leads. But sales guys, it's like, I'm just so used to leads coming to me. Yeah, because you had somebody paying for the leads for you to close so they can pay you 20%.
For sure.
Yeah.
That was it.
So making that mindset. And a lot of them, with that transition, I think everybody should go to inbound, but don't just jump into inbound. Yeah. Right. You can't jump into it. Like, you got to understand what your budget is, and you should budget it for a couple of months. Yeah. Most people come to inbound, I know it's a big facade out there, like, hey, you can close your first deal in the first month and make 20K and just keep putting back in marketing. No, guys, it's going to take 3 months for that deal to close. You lock it under contract, take you 30 days if it's wholesaling. But if you're fixing and flipping it, it's going to take way longer because you got to do the rehab and all of that stuff. But a lot of people don't equate
and deals fall out all the time.
Exactly. And deals fall out. That's the biggest point. People don't add that in their cost as well.
For
It's like, all right.
Yeah. You know, people talk to us a lot about, hey, you know, I'm going from texting and cold calling and now I'm or door knocking and now I want to start investing into marketing. what channel do you think I should invest into is what they always ask me.
Mm.
And I'm always like, man, it's not so much the channel as like, how much money do you actually have for runway? Because if you don't, it's not going to be like you invest some money this month. It could happen. You could invest money this month and get a deal and it closes. I'm not saying it can't, but more than likely it's going to take 90 days for that deal to, for that marketing dollar to come back around. Exactly. Maybe 120 days.
Exactly. Exactly. And a lot of them, well, thank you for telling them that, because they don't come in with the right expectation. It's like, all right, I got 2K. I want to get five deals. I was talking to some guy, we're like, 2K, you want to get five deals? How in 2 weeks? How many deals you doing now? They like, yeah, but cold call, I'm only doing one, but I can sell. I promise you I can sell. And I'm like, but you only doing one deal now with cold calling and what you've been doing for the last year or two, but you want to spend 2K and get five from inbound? It doesn't work like that. So
that would be amazing.
Yeah. It would be, everybody jumping to inbound right now listening. They're like, yeah, let's go to inbound if it made sense that way.
Yeah.
But it's business.
You have to have some budget to make it work.
Oh, you have to have a big budget.
Yeah.
Not just a small budget. You have to have a good budget when you're coming into it. And you have to be like, how long can I weather this storm for? Because most of them get in it, they think they got the budget, but normal wholesalers, man, they get in it, 20K rip. Just, you know, the young kids, they make 20K, they going to spend it all and don't mess none of the business. You, how many stories out here like, yeah, man, got my deal closed and I went to Miami. Okay, came back. All right, now you got to do marketing again. Oh, okay. What happened? Man, dude, I got to go cold call and get some money up. And it's just because they don't have that financial literacy or understanding of business.
So let's say, because we've got listeners all over the country. So let's say that I'm in the Midwest. I don't know. Let's pick a city out in the Midwest. Let's say I'm in Dayton, Ohio.
Ooh, okay.
You know, is that going to be different from somebody, let's say in Houston, a wholesaler in Houston, their kind of budget that they need to spend to get inbound leads and actually make money from it?
Oh, for sure. Yes. So let's, I like to use the example of Cali.
Okay.
You know, because I got bigger spreads out there.
Okay.
Spreads and rips, assignment fees for the listeners, for the rounders. So compared to like Dayton, Ohio, the spreads would be smaller, right? So you, in Cali, LA, you're probably looking at like 30, 40K assignment fee, whereas in Dayton, Ohio, you're probably looking at like 10K assignment fees.
For sure.
So the cost per getting that deal is going to be cheaper in Dayton than it is to in LA.
Okay.
But a lot of the guys don't understand that.
So when you say it's cheaper, you know, give us some ballparks of like, what do you think somebody, expectation-wise, what do you think they should come in with, like in their mind, you know, do they need to have $1,500 for a marketing budget, $5,000, $10,000, $20,000?
I think they should genuinely have at least $5K for 3 months. So 15 grand
15
set
grand.
Aside. Like, you need to just be sitting on like, hey, I have 15 grand and I'm going to designate to marketing and then let it play out. And that's the only way you can get really good data after 3 months.
Yeah.
After those 90 days period, you should be able to get good data. You should be at least turning a profit or at least having a deal or two close, and then just keep on dumping it and taking that money back into
it. When you say get data, what does that mean?
So like with like Google or like Facebook or TikTok, we got to optimize the algorithm, right? So you have to be able to say, all right, Facebook, I want to target, you know, motivated sellers. So that means I want to target their behaviors. What is majority motivated sellers are doing? Facebook doesn't know what motivated sellers are doing for you just yet because they don't know you're targeting motivated sellers until you get enough motivated sellers clicking on your ad.
Gotcha.
Now I understand what you're looking for. So let me send more of those people to see your ad.
Gotcha.
Then it clicks. Yeah.
So it's got to learn for you.
It got to learn a lot. Yeah.
So on the marketing side, that initial budget is really your research and development budget. You're basically just trying to get as many clicks as you can so that the platform, so that your algorithms on the back end can start to study and digest the people that are doing the clicking. That way, in that next month when you spend again, okay, now that money is going towards targeting the profile of the person who clicked in the previous months.
Yes, exactly. That's a good way of putting it. Yes, sir. So, because what you want to do is not just optimize for as many clicks, it's like the right clicks. Because here's what happens. Some clients are coming to us from using previous companies, and they're just running bland, like, landing pages. Just ask for name, number, and email. What happens is anybody submit it. You get a lot of buyer leads. You get a lot of people that want to rent because they see, oh, okay, you buy houses, so you must have houses for sale, or you must have houses for rent since you buy houses. So they click on it, and you realize you're talking to a renter, but you're trying to wholesale the deal.
For sure.
So you need a better and longer lead form, or you need more questions to basically qualify. Say, hey, I'm looking for people that have to sell that are in distressed situations. And if I get enough of those click, I can start optimizing in the right direction. So what we implemented in our company was the quality calls. So it's like what is a quality call? It's like, all right, if you got 20 leads, out of those 20 leads, which of these leads are coming from which ad set? I know I'm getting really technical because who's going to say, okay.
For sure.
So it was like, which of these leads are coming from this ad set? Because we're doing different interests. We're doing different, you know, headlines, different ad copies. So what we're going to do and say, all right, Samantha, she was a motivated seller lead. What did she come from? She came from this interest right here. Let's look up U-Haul. Or she came from this broad campaign with this headline.
And so, you're tracing it back to which...
Exactly where they came from.
Okay.
So, and that's it. And then guess what happens then with the marketing budget? You go and say, all right, I like leads like that. I want more leads like that. So we go and take the bad ones off that you say, hey, Courtney, these was 5 bad leads. All right, we cut those off because normally all the 5 bad leads come from one ad set and one ad. So we cut that off and put the budget in a good one. And we just keep on.
Just optimize.
Keep on keeping on. Yes, sir.
Okay.
So that takes a lot of... So again, setting expectations with the clients that you're onboarding,
that
takes a lot of iteration with your team and the client.
Yeah.
It's not like the client is just writing you a check and saying, send me leads.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, hey, this worked, this didn't, so that your team can learn from your client's experiences in terms of how to cater what they're doing.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So what we just did was we came out with like a survey. Because we wanted to see, so we sent it to all of our clients and was like, all right, rate the experience of like the onboarding, see where the little tweaks at, because we got to make it, I need them setting better expectations, right? And then this market's got the election coming up, so it's going to be even harder for advertising dollars.
For sure.
Right? So it's like, all right, you got to keep that in mind. So you got to stay up to date on the market trends. You got to stay up to date on everything. And as a marketing company, someone hire us, guess what they're expecting us to do? Stay up to date on all of that
for
stuff.
Sure.
So I need to see exactly where at in that funnel that clients are getting misled expectations, and they just have to keep reiterating like, hey, we're at month 2. This is what's going to happen. We told you this at the beginning, because guess what happened? That deal they thought they was going to close fell off,
right?
Like you said. And it's like, oh, now I need the money. Now I need the money. And then they whole marketing changed because they went spending in Miami. Yeah. They don't understand business. They're just sales guys, you know? Yeah.
They had fun in Miami.
Yeah, they had fun in Miami.
Miami's a great place to go spend some money.
Yeah. So. Or Vegas, you know.
Vegas. Vegas is fun too.
Yeah. Vegas is a great place to lose some money.
Exactly.
I hear they got good bull riding in Vegas, though.
Oh, yeah, some really good one out there. They got a cowboy Christmas out there. Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious. Okay, so it sounds like really if you're going to do like Facebook or like social media marketing for direct to seller, you've got to have some runway and you have to – look at it more like Andrew was saying, more like research and development for the first 90 days.
Yeah.
And hopefully you can get a deal done in the first 90 days to make it work.
Yes, yes. Ideally, that's what you kind of want to do. Say, hey, let us figure it out. But a lot of people come to us and say, shouldn't you already have somebody in this market? Shouldn't the marketing dollars been spent on research and development?
That's a good point. What? Yeah.
Yeah. So it works like that. But that's only give us like 20, 30%. We know which headlines work, right? And yours still have to optimize itself. Right, because if we just one thing I wouldn't do is take, let's say, 150 of your leads and bring somebody else on in the market and put it into their ad account, because then you wouldn't trust us.
Right,
right, because then like, all right, then we don't want to. We want to keep that integrity, and a lot of people don't, you know. And we want all our clients to keep all the data once they leave us.
For sure.
So we run it through their accounts. A way we can come back that and say, all right, if you trust me, give me your credit card. I put it inside of the ad account. I charge a card every month. And then the next client could do the same thing, but you get no data.
Right.
What you don't want to do is spend $50,000, $60,000, $100,000 collecting the data, optimizing your pixel in the right way. The marketing company decide to vanish, or you decide to go your separate ways, and that $100,000 went in a drain. But yes, you did deals from it. You probably was profitable. But in the end, you got to start all the way back over from scratch.
So what you're saying is that pixel and the dollars that you spend on optimizing that pixel gets better over time and becomes more valuable over time.
More valuable over time. And you want to keep it. Like as the business owner. Yeah, you want to keep it for sure.
Really?
Yeah, because that's why we tell the clients we're going to run it through your account. Like I have one client right now. He's at this point, he spent like $300,000. His cost per country, and he'd been in for like a year and a half. As of right now, it started off at like $2,000, but now it went down. He's probably, his cost per closed deal is like $700.
That's phenomenal.
That's insane.
It's insane. And his average assignment fee is like $18,000.
Wow.
So now if you look at that and it's like, all right, year and a half, all of that, and you can go look in his ad account, I'm like, he spent $300,000. It's $300,000 for him to know that, and it just keep on coming down because we know, and we probably tried like 1,000 ads in his account, so we know what works.
Yeah.
And he get to keep the data when he leaves. So he did 50 contracts last month. Yeah, it was 50 contracts last month. Now just imagine them. We want to leave him this month.
Yeah.
now he have to start all the way back over.
For sure.
But it's all in this account. So he get to keep it and keep doing at least 50 if he decide to leave us. Probably can't scale up further without knowing the knowledge of it, but he can at least say, oh, I got a baseline. I know what works and what doesn't.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Speaking about the knowledge of it and whatnot, how often or how quickly are these platforms changing what you have to do on your end?
Ooh, they change a lot. I would say probably like every 3 months, you got something that's going on. Like I would say the beginning of the year, right? We started off, Google was crazy, performing crazy. Then like 3 months later, landing pages was performing really well. What's that? It's the landing pages, we run them on Facebook. They come to a landing page, we take them off Facebook because it's higher quality. Then lead forms. And then those lead forms start performing. Then we had to do extended lead forms, asking more questions. So we're making adjustments probably like every week. My media buyers are in the ad accounts or just looking at it to make sure everything is lined up. But like huge adjustments, probably like every 3 months, say, hey, this is no longer working. We've spent, in 3 months, we'll probably spend like, you know, 1.5. And then like all of our clients ad spend, because I like to tell them we're a financial firm, because we're managing like 1.5 every quarter. And
1.5 million in ad spend? Or?
Yeah, 1.5 million in ad spend every quarter. And that's a lot. You know, if you was a financial firm, you'd say, hey, if I give you 1.5 million of my dollars, you better make sure I get a return.
For sure.
And you don't want to have the same thing in Q1 and Q4. And a lot of marketing companies, they ain't prepared for the election this year because it's only every 4 years. But they haven't been around long enough to withstand an election. So they don't know how the CPMs is finna go through the roof.
Right.
Yeah.
So of these changes every 3 months where you're seeing these iterations, what, I mean, the primary drivers behind those, is that the platforms themselves doing things? Is that cultural influences? There's a news story, there's an election, there's this and that. Like, what is triggering the need for that retooling?
So, yes, so you got the cultural influences for sure, and the platforms are changing. But one of the biggest things you got is your competitors. They're going to copy you. So, like, if anyone want to go look up you guys' ads and see what we're running, they can go and type in Sell to JR on Facebook Ads Library and see all your ads, and literally, they're just lazy. They just copy it, paste. Copy, paste it into their ad account and go and do.
Rounders do not do that, please.
Or if you do, they'll be different in 3 months. Yeah. So they'll
be different way before. Because what we do is we manage the CPL. So, let's say the CPL is 100, right? The cost per lead is 100 bucks. And we start to see it shoot up, and we're like, this is a problem. It should be coming down. And the quality staying the same, and the quality get worse, we're like, all right, yeah, we got to change something. And we found out, oh, okay, yeah, because 20 other competitors started to go and do the same exact thing, and that's why they always playing catch up. It can work. You probably could do like a one deal a month from copying off somebody, but in order to get to like 5-10 deals a month, you ain't going to get there just copying.
Yeah.
So that's an important thing, right? So you hear all this, and when it comes to marketing, you can copycat and you can have some success doing that, but where you really have success is being the leader in it. And that's where you position your clients, and that's what you're doing, is staying in front of everything so that by the time people are trailing behind, they're already dealing with yesterday's data and it's somewhat irrelevant. Yeah, you might get some crumbs from that here and there, but it's not going to be sustainable long term on that same model or that same script or whatever it is that may have been the winner at that time.
Exactly. And I like to say inside of the company, like I don't got no competitors. Like, you know, you say you compete with yourself. I don't got no competitors. But I say who I'm competing against is our clients' competitors.
Yeah.
So like I'm not competing with none of the other marketing agencies. Right. So I just compete with my clients' competitors and who's running their ads.
Yeah.
My competitors. So it's like a full on brawl. Like with all my clients say, hey, I'm trying to put the next guy out of business. I want my client to put the next guy out of business and get his deals.
Yeah.
Right, because it's super competitive. If you guys didn't know wholesaling and then real estate, it's really just for the rounders. It's super competitive. And it's just who works the hardest.
Yeah.
Like, and who wins. And
that is true.
If you got a good marketing company that's working just as hard as you, you're going to succeed. But if they don't care, like, your quality will show.
100%. I think what you said earlier, too, is how you're watching the CPLs, the cost per lead is kind of a indicator metric for you. Rounders, if you're doing any kind of marketing, whether it's in real estate, whether it's in anything, and you're working with a marketing firm and they're not obsessed with that metric, then you may have the wrong relationship, because they may come back to you and say, oh, it's up because there's more competition or because of the election or because of this or because of that. Rather, what Courtney's talking about is saying, no, that is an indicator that we need to change something in how we're behaving and how we're acting, because that is telling us that there's something else going on. So I think that is a, a massive takeaway that no matter what you're doing or where you're marketing, if you're working with someone, that should be the conversation that you're having.
Exactly. For sure. I like that. Yeah, that's a good way. Thank you for elaborating that, because that a lot of people, they just, we track a lot of, like, CPLs is just one of the metrics we look at. We're going to look at, all right, what's the cost per deal? All right, what's the average spread on their deal? So we keep the cost per deal here. How much profit are they looking at?
Yeah.
Okay, so if they're looking at this profit, are you happy here? Yes, the client's happy here. So how can we scale this up with this same cost per deal, including their fallout rate, including everything? How can we reverse engineer it? All right, that means they're converting 1 out of 20 leads. So if their cost per deal is, just for easy numbers, $2,000, their cost per lead is 100, and they're converting 1 out of 20.
20 grand.
All right.
Or 2 grand.
Two grand, and then they average spread is 20 grand. Yeah. It's like, all right, they're profitable there. So how can we scale this up so they spend $10K a month? Because yeah, that's where the trouble comes. If we want to get technical, scaling it up is really hard. So go from like 3 grand a month in ad spend to like 6 grand in ad spend to like 30 grand in ad spend.
What makes it so difficult?
Because here's what happened. What you don't want to do is a lot of companies say, hey, I want to increase my ad spend. Let's double it because I'm getting deals. I'm doing good. What they're going to do is just double the budget on the campaigns. But it resets everything.
Does it?
Yes, it resets everything.
And when you say reset, like, what is it resetting?
It's resetting that campaign. So if you got a campaign that's already performing, you never want to increase the budget by more than 20%.
Okay.
So if you're spending $100 on an ad set that is bringing a lot of quality leads, you want to just do 120.
Okay.
Max. Go anything over that, it restarts over. Now that campaign is basically goes to like it spent zero.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So you still get the data, but it's like now you got to go and keep optimizing. But what happened, man, I made this mistake and it cost me hundreds of thousands. I hired a media buyer for myself, right? And I was like, all right, I'm tired of doing this because I was spending like $75,000 in my own ad spend a month. And I was like, all right, dude, I just want to increase the ad spend to 100K. He went in there and just duplicated everything for like 3 months. It was learning for 3 months because I was spending so much. And I literally was like, yeah, dude, it's not going to work. I had to let him go. And I had to go back in there. It probably took me like 15 hours and I had to break it up over like 2 weeks just to fix that. And I was like, and it took the company a while to kind of pick up the quality leads coming in.
Yeah.
So I went straight to my team. Guys, we're never making this mistake for no client because it just cost me hundreds of thousands of dollars in ad spend. We're not causing our clients that much in ad spend.
Yeah. Learn the hard way.
He had to learn the hard way. I was like, yeah, make sure like this doesn't happen. So you got different things like far as in vertical scaling and horizontal scaling.
What is that?
So vertical scaling is, you know, you can increase it by 20%, as I stated earlier. Horizontal is like, all right, if this ad set is producing at 100, what we could do is just duplicate it. Instead of putting it at 200, we could just duplicate it and split another 100. So now you're still spending 200, but you still have that top performer and you're giving this some time to catch up.
Okay.
And then inside of it, you're breaking down all the ads and you see which ad is producing the highest quality leads, where that's going into. It's kind of hard to explain that to the listeners if I don't got the computer screen pulled up.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, the way you talk about it, your knowledge on it, this is obviously your area of expertise. You know, what is the experience or what expectation-wise, again, with your clients to where, you know, someone just says, I just want this to work. I don't care about all the details. Or, like, how involved are your clients in this process?
So I try to make them be as involved as possible because it's a business, right? So it's like I like the position like we're partners. In a business, if you guys are partners, you're going to talk about, hey, what's next? All right, what we're going to do, how profitable we want to be, and things like that. So I don't care about them being, like, so involved because some of them don't care. Like, hey, I just want the leads.
Yeah.
But at least talk to us at least 2-3 times a month.
Yeah.
Like, show up to the quality calls, like, just so we can see we're optimizing in the right direction. We get to see your face. You get to see our face. You see that we're working. You see that we're in it with you. It's a win-win no matter where it goes.
Because sure.
What happened, let's say, like, 3 months back, 4 or 5 months back, I get a call from the client that did 50 contracts in July. So I get a call from him. He's like, hey, man, what's going on with the lead quality? The leads are going down. I was like, oh, snap. And he's spending, like, $30,000 a month. So if lead quality is going down, that's a big problem. That's $1,000 a day. So if like 7 days of lead quality being bad for 7 days, you're looking at $7,000 lost
right in
the trash. And we're like, oh, what's going on? What's going on? And I go and talk to the back end team, like, what's going on, guys? Let's fix this. And I was like, oh, he ain't showed up for a quality call in the last 3 months.
Oh.
I'm like, okay. Well,
no wonder it's going bad.
Yeah, no wonder it's going bad. And I was like, dude, we didn't know which way to optimize, so we just left it because we're thinking you're getting really good results because you're not showing up. This is why it's important to show up. He started showing up. I think at the time he was only like 20 deals a month, 20 contracts. Started showing up. June, July, boom.
There you go.
He went and smacked them, 50 contracts. And nice. He sent me a text yesterday like, hey, yeah, we're doing 3 contracts a day. And I was like, yeah, that's good because you're showing up to your calls. It's really good, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, from your client's perspective, right? I mean, again, you talk about, you know, the guys running a business type of thing. This is marketing dollars are an investment. You expect a return on that investment.
Yeah.
And if the client's, you know, going to expect that return, then they need to invest their time and everything on those calls as well. So it's very understandable and makes a lot of sense of how you kind of position that for your clients to have success.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And it's really big on budgeting when it comes down to that investment too, because I heard probably 2 months ago, I was listening to Alex from Ozy, and he said on his podcast, he was like, so if you're going to ask someone for $1,000 and all they make is $10,000, that's 10% of the income. It's the equivalent of asking somebody who make $100 million, you ask them for $10 million to manage their dollar, like $10 million of their dollars. They're good. Like if they're at $10 million, they're going to probably be making sure you know exactly what you're doing with their money. When it's someone with $1,000, it's not that, like it's the equivalent of that guy with the $10 million.
Yeah.
So you're like, that's 10% of their income, both of their income. So they're both going to like just watch you with like hawk eyes. It's like, for dude, sure. $1,000. So that's why having a good budget is really good for a lot of people. Yeah. For they even hop into it and entertain it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, man. Well, Courtney, we've loved having you on the show and sharing all the marketing nuggets with the Rounders. How can people get a hold of you? And how can they, if they want to work with Alpha Media, how do they go about doing that?
Guys, you can get a hold of me. Just follow me on Instagram, Courtney Scott Official. It's on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Nice. Just hit me up there.
Courtney Scott Official.
Courtney Scott Official.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Courtney. We appreciate it, man. Looking forward to working with you in the future.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Gentlemen.